Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Thanks for listening to the latest Football Digest podcast, available on all podcast platforms. Subscribe now through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts from, so you don't miss a single episode.
Hello and welcome to the Football Digest podcast. I'm your host, Conor Brumley, and I'm joined today by John Cross and Andy Dunn, as always, on a Monday morning where we're going to digest a pretty wild weekend of Premier League action. Certainly a wild Sunday of Premier League action. I think everyone who, well, I mean, you were at the games, but me who was sat at home watching was expecting two home wins for Liverpool and also, but it didn't quite transpire. Man City now top of the Premier League as well. But we'll start with you, Andy, because you were at Anfield yesterday. What happened to Liverpool?
Well, let's start. I actually... When I was writing the reports at the game, I thought, I'm not going to fall into this trap. Not a trap, but obviously what happened to Liverpool is the big question. The significance of the results is obviously attached to the title race. But let's start by saying how magnificent Crystal Palace were. You know, I really do want to make that point. I just thought, at the end of the game, I thought, I'm not going to get sucked into Liverpool's faults, of which there were many. I will address those. However, let's first of all pay tribute to Crystal Palace because they were magnificent yesterday. They were not only were they very clever in the way they adapted their game plan, considering they had a lot of injuries at the back. The way Oliver Glasner came up with a system that worked. They were very, very clever in the first half. Then in the second half, yes, Liverpool were very wasteful, but Palace defended magnificently, led by Joachim Andersen, who I thought was magnificent. You know, they put bodies on the line. And what I thought was really good about that game yesterday was that, okay, listen, Palace did need the points. You know, they're 8 points ahead of safety now and, you know, we'll stay up. But I think even before yesterday, they weren't in a state of serious fear about relegation, yet they went to Anfield and they literally, you know, gave 100% to that game. And I thought it was a really good result, in inverted commas, for the integrity of the Premier League. You know, the team like Palace could go there. I think we all, as you said, Conor, there, we all expected a routine Liverpool win. We didn't expect Palace to lie down, but you didn't expect that much resistance. It was sensational. So I just want to sort of say that, and also, you know, it was magnificent to see Michael Olise and Eberechi Eze in harness. Very rare they are. They were back together yesterday. They were fantastic. I thought Jean-Philippe Mateta led the line well. So I do think that, you know, and if I'm a Palace fan and I'm reading the newspapers this morning and I'm reading about, you know, surrender and bottle jobs and stuff like that, I'd be quite offended because I'd be saying, well, hang on a minute, let's give us some credit for going there and pulling off a fantastic result, you know, that was very much well deserved. However, of course, you know, the significance is at the top end of the Premier League. And, you know, Liverpool, quite simply, A, in the first half, They were just not even close to being at the races. They were the same lethargy that affected them on Thursday night against Atalanta was there. They were second to most 50-50 balls. They were wasteful in their passing. Second half, they perked up. Second half, predictably, they laid some sort of siege to the Palace goal, but were very wasteful in front of goal. And that's what they've been in the last two games. You know, for those lovers of expected goals, I think their XG over the two games was 4.9. They didn't score, as we know. And as I say, while Palace did defend heroically, great blocks from Nathaniel Clyde, from Tyrick Mitchell, as I say, Anderson played well. While they did defend well, Liverpool were very, very wasteful. Curtis Jones, Darwin Nunez, Diogo Jota when he came on, Mo Salah looked a shadow of himself. And in a way, Salah's performance to me sums up how Liverpool have gone over the last couple of games. You know, they're just not quite there. They don't seem quite, I don't know, they seem half a yard off the pace. And it'll be interesting to see what John thinks about this. You know, they just seem to be, I think there's a couple of things. I think the performances at Old Trafford in the Cup and the League might have had some sort of effect. You know, when you go to Old Trafford and you pretty much, you know, dominate both games and you come away getting knocked out of the Cup and only getting a point in the League, I think it has an effect. And I do wonder, as odd as it may seem, whether or not, finally, the long goodbye from Klopp is beginning to have some sort of impact on the intensity of this team. I don't see them as intense as I've seen them in the past. I look at Virgil van Dijk, I don't think he's quite at it. I look at Salah, I don't think he's quite there. You know, I look at that centre midfield and they weren't as tenacious as they normally are. So I just wonder if that, you know, surprise decision to announce his departure so early is having some sort of effect. But they were pretty much off the pace for a lot of the game yesterday.
John, do you think, you know, can Liverpool recover from this? Because we all, you know, a couple of months ago, before that Man United Cup game, we were like, can they win the quadruple? You know, can they have this brilliant end to the Jurgen Klopp era, win the Premier League, the FA Cup, the Europa League? And now it feels like Liverpool's season, especially after Thursday as well, where they were embarrassed against Atalanta, it feels like Liverpool's season's in disarray at this moment.
Well, here's the thing. I think that their next games will tell us exactly that, really. And listen, if you'd asked me this a week ago, 2 weeks ago, I still would have pointed to this run of four games, which I just think are going to be pivotal. Atalanta away on Thursday night, Fulham away on Sunday, Merseyside derby, Klopp's last, you know, ever game in charge at Everton, at Goodison, on the Wednesday night, right? As it's a domestic game, no kind of TV rule applies. So they're at West Ham on the Saturday lunchtime at 12:30. You've kind of got four away games in 10 days. I mean, that was always going to be a complete and utter nightmare and a huge test of their resilience and their title mettle, if you like. And now, going into it on the back of two really bad Anfield defeats and setbacks, I think it's going to be an even bigger one. I agree with Andy. I do think that basically you might just be seeing the season catching up with Liverpool. I mean, I I'm big mates with Andy and sort of love him to bits and sort of often sort of swap a few ideas and messages and stuff. And I messaged him on Thursday night about Virgil van Dijk against Atalanta. I could not believe that was Virgil van Dijk. It was just one moment and commentary didn't even mention it, to be honest. It was just one of those things that I thought, what's happening there? He was trying to sort of basically, he was almost strutting in a very Virgil van Dijk way, which looks magnificent when it comes off, and it looks absolutely horrendously arrogant when it doesn't. And he was almost trying to sort of see the ball out in the corner from a position that was just never on. It was just far too far out. The Atalanta striker never gives up on it, slides around, wins the ball, takes it into the middle. I mean, wow. I mean, it was just, I was thinking, you've kind of lost it here, guys. I don't know what's happening. And it was really strange. And I thought that sort of kind of really just was typical of Liverpool's approach to defending. I thought they were slack. I thought they'd sort of kind of lost their focus a bit. And I do think every team's going to have a dip, and Liverpool's season has been remarkable, absolutely phenomenal. Andy, you know, tipped him fair play for the title way back when. And, you know, to do that, it was amazing, because I didn't see this season coming at all. So they've still, you know, completely outperformed in my view. But I do think that, you know, maybe time, maybe the squad, maybe the depth has just caught up with them a little bit. You know, it'd be wrong to write off Liverpool and Arsenal now, but City, when they've got their bit between their teeth, when they go top, they're top with six very winnable games to clinch the title, you know. And I have to say, I do think on Saturday night, I underestimated what a big result that was because it applied pressure and the other two just couldn't respond. And I do think, as a result, Liverpool, you know, set the tone for the day with that defeat and performance.
Andy, do you think there was a bit of an impact from the news we saw in the week about Ruben Amorim? You know, we kind of heard that he might be the successor. I know he's since come out and said that he's not had talks. But do you think, you know, you talked about before the fact that the Klopp's long goodbye, and then that news comes out, and that is almost maybe the click to the players to be like, oh, actually he is going, and, you know, we've got a very different future.
Yeah, I do. I do think that whether or not it's the fact that, you know, we all expect Ruben Amorim to come in, and, you know, whether or not that particular sort of development last week has affected the players, I'm not sure. But I do think the overall picture has. Don't forget also, this is a club, you know, there's a feeling of what, of slight uncertainty around. When you go to Anfield, there isn't the same feeling now that, you know, when Klopp first announced it and they had their initial sort of bounce, you know, to Leicester for Jürgen type thing. There's not that feeling around Anfield now. There's a feeling of uncertainty. And that's not just because Klopp's leaving and we're not 100% certain who's coming in. You look around there, and John mentioned Van Dijk, and he's spot on with Van Dijk. And Van Dijk, again, yesterday was in similar form, by the way. And obviously, he should have been punished for a Gerrard-like slip. You know, unfortunately, Mateta couldn't quite do the Denver bar trick. Robertson cleared off the line. Van Dijk again casual yesterday. But he's one of those players, when I mention uncertainty, is who it applies to. Because Van Dijk, his contract has only one season after this to run. Obviously, Mohamed Salah is in exactly the same boat. And Trent Alexander-Arnold is also in the same boat. So you've got, you could argue they are, you know, three of the linchpins of this Liverpool squad. You know, three of the leaders, three of the key players, you know, maybe along with the goalkeeper, Alisson as well. Now, those three players, there's uncertainty about their future. You know, no one knows if Salah's going to stay or go to Saudi in the summer. We've heard stories about Trent Alexander-Arnold and Real Madrid, you know, and Van Dijk of those three, I think, is the more likely to quickly put pen to paper. So there is this feel of what direction the club is heading in. They had that spell when the youngsters came in and did well. So the future looks okay in that sense, but I still get this feeling. There's a sort of, I wouldn't call it anxiety, but it's just a concern of what happens now when Klopp goes. And whether or not that's affecting the players now, I'm not sure. I do think it's probably more likely to be a physical thing. You know, they have had to battle a lot of injuries. Ironically, they're now probably back to the strongest squad as they've had all season. You know, there's only probably Bacicic and Thiago, who you would say are first team players out. However, I do think the way they've had to fight injuries is now catching up with them a bit. And again, John mentions those four games in quick succession. Those two games they've just lost with the first two of 6 and 16 days. And I think physically it's catching up with them, as well as, I think, psychologically about what's happening off the pitch.
John, you were at the Emirates, so that was the other big title game on Sunday. You said in your post-match interview that Arsenal crumbled, you know, sort of under the pressure. You've had 24 hours quite yet, but you've had, you know, a night to sleep on it. Do you still agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I haven't changed, yeah. I mean, it's in the paper as well. So, you know, I tell you what I thought yesterday, and I rebranded it from Super Sunday to Surrender Sunday, because honestly, the two of them basically just, I thought, collapsed, really. As I say, I thought Saturday tea time, Man City have applied the pressure 5-1. They've gone top. Liverpool, you know, I would have expected them to win that, you know, every day of the week, really. And I just feel as if, you know, it's there in Arsenal's hands then to go top. And that brings its own pressure and expectation. And that was my point, really. I just feel as if, yes, they've had the pressure from Man City, but in a way, that result at Anfield applies even more pressure. And I just think there's a reason why, there's several reasons why Man City are champions year in, year out, and now look as if they're favourites to win it for a fourth consecutive year, is because they just handle that pressure. And to me, it looked as if Arsenal didn't handle that pressure. It, you know, I mean, it wasn't purely them crumbling, because very even first half. You know, they definitely had the best chance of the game when Trossard was blocked by Martinez. But honestly, what was Arteta doing with this team selection? I just do not understand it. Trossard into midfield, Havertz wide again. You know, he's just through the middle. It just felt like very strange, you know, and that team selection, having scored so many goals and been so reliable, and so many times we've seen that Trossard is a brilliant impact substitute, but can he do it in the really big games, in the big tests, then basically from the start? I'm not sure. And basically then to give him such a pivotal role, I understand why perhaps he's gone in that direction, because I just, you know, Martinelli came on and Martinelli's not been completely match fit. I bet you he starts in Munich on Wednesday, and there was an element of maybe saving him for that. But I just think try and win the game that's in front of you. And then basically every manager talks about each game as it comes. Oh, what are you thinking about? Are you thinking about Bayern? No, we've got to take this game. Is that actually true, Mikel? No, it's not. Because basically managers do plan for games ahead. And basically I thought it was just clear that basically, you know, Martinelli will start Wednesday and was perhaps saved because he's not completely match fit and match sharp, you know, for every single game, having been out for a while. So I just thought, you know, he slightly got his team selection wrong. And, you know, as I say, very even first half when Odegaard was sensational, brilliant. Second half, it was just all Aston Villa. It's one of the most one-sided halves of football you'll see. Villa were brilliant. And rather like Andy, you just want to praise Villa, you know, in the sort of very Crystal Palace way. They were magnificent. The two centre-halves, outstanding. Absolutely brilliant. I thought Cons was very good. You know, and McGinn ran midfield. Martinez typically always has a great game against Arsenal. He's got something to prove. And Watkins on the break was brilliant. Bailey scored. You know, so many good performances. You know, Tielemans will wonder how on earth he's not scored. And Arsenal just, you know, slowly but surely sunk further and further back. And basically, eventually that goal was going to come. And I just thought the ball straight across the box. Gabriel, been brilliant all season, gets out muscled, couldn't make the challenge. Saliba lets it go. And basically, two of the most reliable players that, you know, for Arsenal season, they've underpinned the whole campaign. Gabriel and Saliba let it go, and Bailey scored. And it's, you know, that was just typical of Arsenal's afternoon. But I do definitely feel that Arsenal felt that weight of expectation. And as soon as, you know, the pressure was put on Arsenal last season, they couldn't quite handle it. And I have to say, it really feels like you know, as soon as the pressure has been applied this season, they've dropped short a little bit again, really. And I do think it was a really telling result, but also a telling, you know, build-up to the game, a build-up that they just couldn't handle, frankly, and the pressure got to them, without doubt.
Andy, I've got listed here on our notes the mentality of Arsenal. I know John's just talked about it there, but you can even go a year further back to last season when you know, bottled, essentially. I hate to use that term, bottled, but that top four race with Spurs and they collapsed under the weight. And it was on the documentary, and you saw them go to Newcastle away, and you could tell by watching the documentary they were panicking about it. They went to Spurs, they got an early red card, you know, and eventually they slipped out the top four. Last season, basically this sort of stage last season, wasn't it? They began the slip down the table. Is there a mentality issue with Arsenal? And do you think, you know, does that stem from the group of players? Does that stem from the manager? You know, what is it that this team doesn't like about the final run-in of a season?
Well, I just think, you know, it is, compared to Manchester City, relatively, as a whole, the squad is relatively inexperienced in dealing with these situations. The manager, essentially, is you know, although he's been there a while now, is relatively inexperienced at dealing with these situations. I think that's the simple fact of the matter, I don't think you can, John's mentioned Aston Villa there. You know, this was a tough game for Arsenal. A really, really tough game. You know, when Villa are on song, when Villa are in form, when Villa get it right, they are an extremely tough side to beat, as Manchester City found out at Villa Park this season, as Arsenal found out at Villa Park this season, you know, as a lot of teams have. So I don't think, you know, it would be extremely harsh to say they bottled it against an Aston Villa team, you know, who are, you know, who are going to probably finish fourth in the league, and who perhaps being, you know, one of the success stories of the season. But I just do think, you know, you've got individual players there who haven't, you know, at the moment, been in this situation before, or certainly only been in this situation last year. And that shows, you know, even the magnificent Declan Rice, you know, he hasn't been in this situation at club level before. So, you know, they it will take some getting used to. And I do agree that, you know, this is, you know, we all agree this is one of the, well, hopefully it will remain one of the best title races. You know, let's hope that it stays close. Let's hope that, you know, City don't, you know, win the next three or four, and Arsenal Liverpool lose again, and City have it wrapped up before, you know, the last couple of weekends of the season. But it remains one of the tensest title races going, and that is bound to get to the players. I also think that I know Aston Villa obviously have the European commitments as well, but I think, you know, the Bayern Munich game might have taken something out of them, and the fact that they're looking ahead to the challenge in Munich on Wednesday might have. You know, I think I understand what John's saying, surrender, you know, and it's a good little tag, surrender Sunday, but I think we just need to hold on just a little bit to see what happens next. You know, they are still only 2 points behind Manchester City with a better goal difference. So you could actually see City draw a game, Arsenal win, and go back to the top of the table. Let's see how they react. It'll be interesting to see what happens after Wednesday, you know, and that is going to be key, isn't it? You know, that will be one of the keys. You know, there's a school of thought that suggests that going out against Munich on Wednesday wouldn't be, you know, a catastrophe in the Premier League context. In other words, you know, if City go through and Arsenal go out, then obviously it's two more games for City it will be against Bayern Munich, obviously, and the intensity of those might take something away from their Premier League challenge. So we'll have to wait and see. But just too early to say they're bottling it yet.
Do you think, looking ahead to the Champions League games in midweek, what do you think the impact will be for Arsenal mentally heading into that? Because can they separate this, you know, separate the sort of, I say trauma is maybe too strong a word, but, you know, the trauma of this past weekend's result, and the microscope being on the team, the microscope being on Mikel Arteta. Do you think they can go to Munich and put on a positive performance and get through? Or do you think that this, you know, a little bit of a shaky run, you know, the last few days have been difficult for them. Do you think that'll have an impact?
No, look, I think they will still have a good chance, I think, of going through against Munich. I think that's separate. And I still think that 2-2, are Arsenal capable of either winning or drawing and taking it to penalties? Yes, absolutely. You know, then they could still, you know, go through. They went through in penalties in the last round. So I do think that, you know, their season, their form has been better than Bayern Munich, frankly. So I still think that Arsenal have got a really good chance. Make Bayern Munich slight favourites because they've got home advantage, you know. And basically, I think that they beat Cologne on Saturday 2-0, kept their first clean sheet in, 10 Bundesliga games. The home fans were, you know, they rested a few, frankly, and still won from a very, you know, lightly starting lineup. They're missing Gnabry, they're missing Coman, but then the fans are chanting about European Cups during the game. You know, it's just, they're up for it, basically. They are really going to be fired up for it, absolutely. So that is going to be a huge test. But can Arsenal get through? Yes, absolutely. But what state of mind do they go to Bayern for it? I think, personally, they go with their confidence checked and their belief, you know, be slightly lower because of the results. Yes, I think you have to separate the two. But honestly, I think the Champions League games takes so much out of you, both mentally and physically. They're incredibly intense. They're a real test for the players. There's a reason why it's the ultimate, because it is testing. It takes you to another level. And I think with that in mind, I think it's going to be very difficult for Arsenal to go to Bayern on Wednesday and then recover, get home, and then face Wolves on Saturday night. I mean, honestly, if Arsenal then lose to Bayern, where does that leave their mentality for Wolves? So it would be ridiculous to suggest that the two aren't linked. Of course, your form is, and your mentality is, and your confidence and momentum. And I think with that in mind, I think Bayern, you know, if Arsenal had won on Sunday, we'd be talking about a boy in Arsenal who were top of the table and, you know, believing that they could win, you know, the title and go to Bayern. Who's scared of Bayern? You know, but now it's a different scenario and you're much more flat. And I don't think the belief is there. Honestly, Arteta was unhappy, snappy, and downbeat in his press conference yesterday. And, you know, it's difficult to switch that off with the players. It really is. So I think it's a very different Arsenal team that suffered a defeat than it would have been if they'd won.
Do you think, Andy, that Arsenal will go to Munich almost with more pressure because they lost in the Premier League? Because now their eggs, I'm not saying that eggs need to be in the Champions League basket only. They can still win the Premier League. I mean, you know, Man City can lose games of football. But they will know as players, you know, they're not idiots. They know that Man City, at this time of the season of the Premier League, win. They don't drop points at this time of the year. Do you think Arsenal will therefore internalise that and think, well, the Champions League might be our last hope this season of doing something really special?
Yeah, well, listen, Manchester City don't drop points at any time of the year, do they? You know, people say City can go on these type of runs. Well, just City are pretty much always on this type of run, aren't they? I mean, it's incredible pressure that gets put on the teams by the fact that City are so remorseless. No, I don't. I think Arsenal go to Munich. You know what? I'm not saying it's like a free pass, but, you know, I mean, it's a tough place to go to the Allianz. You know, it really is. We've been in many times covering teams there, and it's a hard place to... Listen, I remember Manchester City going there and getting a real going over early on. They came out of it eventually, you know, and won the tie. But it can be a very intimidating place to go to. I think Arsenal... You know, I don't think there's a huge expectation on Arsenal going into Wednesday's game. And I do think they can play with a little bit of freedom. You know, I really do. I think they'll enjoy it there. You know, you will get chances against Munich. You know, that's one thing. I covered a game there, a couple of games there this season, and Manchester United went there. And if you remember, they got beaten 4-3, I think it was. And like, you know, it was 4-3 in the game, could have probably finished about 8-6, so you will get opportunities there. John just referenced that was Bayern's first clean sheet for a while. I think Arsenal can go with a little bit of freedom there. I do genuinely think that, you know, there is that element that almost when you say, will they sort of compartmentalize it? Well, in a way, what I referenced before is if they are beaten and they do go out to the Champions League, they have still got obviously a lot to play for the rest of the season. They've got those remaining 6 Premier League games that they can then concentrate on. So I don't think going out of the Champions League, and they've got to qualify for the Champions League again, don't forget. So that pressure is alleviated. They're playing Champions League football next season. And, you know, if they get beaten, they can concentrate on those 6 league games. And I do think that should give them a little bit of freedom out there in Munich. And I expect them to do that. I don't expect them to be nervous. I expect them to go out there. And they've seen that they can get at Munich from the way the first leg went, and I think it'll be a cracker. I do. I think this is a great opportunity for Arsenal to actually, you know, forget about what's just happened on Sunday. Forget about what they're going to read in this morning's papers about them possibly choking the game. And I just think it's great. I think it's a great tie. It's going to be fascinating the way these teams deal with these game after game after game. I mean, Manchester City, if you think about it, you know, it's incredible. They've got, you know, the league game, and then they obviously play Real Madrid, and then they've got an FA Cup semi-final, probably followed by, more than likely, another league game, and then a Champions League semi-final. you know, and they dealt with it last season. If they can deal with it again, it's remarkable. Because I just think that, you know, the intensity that I think, for example, Liverpool are struggling with of having these games, pretty much all three of these teams are playing a game every, what, 3 or 4 days, aren't they? You know, 6 games in 18, 19 days for Arsenal and City, 6 and 16 for Liverpool. And listen, I'm the first to sort of be very sceptical about managers' complaints about fixture schedules. But I do think, as thrilling as it is for us, it really is a massive, massive test on these players and managers to have this many games in such a short space of time at this crucial time of the season.
Hey, we'll talk now a little bit about Man City. Yeah, we've kind of talked about Man City, but not directly about Man City yet. So we'll focus on them for a little bit. Obviously, they've got Real Madrid in the Champions League coming up. And in my head, I just think back to last season when they murdered Real Madrid at home in the Champions League. Are we expecting similar this season? I mean, it seems ridiculous to be suggesting that Real Madrid could lose a game 4-0, you know, because of how good they are. But it feels like with this Man City team, they are capable, John, of destroying anyone at home. And, you know, with the Champions League tie, it's evenly poised, 3-3 from last week. I feel like Man City could, again, not necessarily win 4-0, but could have a comfortable as you could expect against Real Madrid evening.
Well, here's the thing. I remember writing that night, and I don't think I was alone in saying that Man City win over Real Madrid was the single best performance I'd seen under Pep Guardiola for City. They were absolutely phenomenal. They were so dominant. They blew away a team with so much Champions League pedigree and success. Yes, they weren't, you know, as strong last season as they are this season, Real Madrid. But to beat them like that at the Etihad was just sensational. They were brilliant, absolutely fantastic from first minute to last. They were sensational. We forget just, you know, how good a quality of player that sort of kind of Real Madrid have got in that lineup, you know, then, and they still have now. So I think it'd be very difficult to replicate that level of performance. It was, you know, if it wasn't their best, I bet you any City aficionado would say it was in their top three under Guardiola of performance. So it'd be very difficult, you know, myself included. A few people have sort of suggested, are they still at that level that they were last season? I'm not sure that they are. I don't think they're quite as good. I don't think they're quite as efficient as they were, not quite as clicking as they're missing, you know, the likes of Gundogan, for example. You know, I do think he was a big miss. It perhaps hasn't been replaced, but they're still a phenomenal football team. And I still think they're, you know, even though they might not be as good, I still think they're better than the rest in the Premier League. And I still make them favourites to win the Champions League because, you know, they were that good last season. They've got a little bit of wriggle room, basically. I just think they, you know, this is the night, basically, that Guardiola comes into his own. Because he can handle it on the big occasion. You know, I think in the past, history has taught us that he used to make sort of kind of strange tactical choices, less so now. And I think they'll basically, I don't think he'll overthink it this time. I think he'll go to his first choice 11 as where possible, injuries allowing. And I just think he'll get it done, basically. You know, if that's a night when Bernardo Silva's at his best, De Bruyne's at his best, you know, Haaland scoring, then I'm sorry, but I still think that sort of, you know, they're the best team in Europe, and I still think that they will beat Real Madrid, perhaps not quite as convincingly as last year, but I do still think that they're better than the rest.
Andy, John there mentioned Haaland scoring, and I wanted to touch on that because, to me, I feel like he's got something to prove right now. I feel like in the big games, there's a question mark over him, you know, when Man City need somebody to score a goal when games are tight in these big, big matches that I must win. I feel like sometimes Haaland isn't necessarily getting them goals. And certainly that's a rhetoric that's been fed out recently. We saw Roy Keane, you know, say there was his overall, what was it? His play was League Two level or something the other week. Do you think it's important for him this game that he puts a stamp on it and gets himself an important goal?
No is the simple answer. I mean, listen, it'd be nice for him, but I think what's important is the City win. And Pep Guardiola made on Friday in his press conference, you know, and basically addressed that question that you've just put there, Connor. And he basically said, listen, he said, after that game against Real Madrid, when obviously he didn't score in the 3-3 in the Bernabeu, he said, I went into that dressing room, the locker room, as he called it. He said, in the locker room, he said, and Haaland, you know, had the biggest smile on his face. He was happy. He was singing. He was talking about what a great performance it was. He's a team player. He says, now what you're seeing now, he says, is Haaland the team player? You know, I mean, Haaland, you know, only scored, obviously, the penalty on Saturday, but part of a very good team performance. And he's part of a team that is scoring goals. That's Guardiola's point, is that he said, listen, he went to Real Madrid last week. He says, and they essentially had two centre-halves marking, two very good centre-halves. And Guardiola makes the point that you don't have to be, you know, a genius coach to work out that if there are two people marking Haaland, then that means there's space for other people to score goals, which City are scoring in abundance. You know, they've scored 16 goals in the last four games. You know, they score a lot of goals. Now, whether or not Haaland's scoring them, in essence, to Guardiola and even to the player himself, although I'm sure, you know, he would love to be scoring them, is not the absolute priority for them. That's what they're saying. And Pep's point is that Haaland is creating a lot of chaos. I agree. It would be, you know, and don't forget that in the run-in last season, in the run-in to them winning the league, winning the FA Cup, winning the Champions League, if I remember rightly, he scored very, very few goals in those last half a dozen games, if I remember rightly. I'm not sure he scored that many, if any at all, maybe one or two. I really can't exactly remember, but I do know that he had this sort of run towards the end of last season. So, yes, I get what you're saying. Yes, I wouldn't be surprised if Haaland on Wednesday, you know, scores and maybe scores more than one. I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't think that, you know, I don't think he's got anything to prove. You know, the guy's the golden boot holder. The guy's the Premier League top scorer. The guy's Football of the Year. The guy won the treble last season. You know, I don't think he's got an awful lot to prove, no. But I do think that Guardiola is happy with his all-round performance at the moment and happy with how he distracts the opposition defence.
Okay, well, switch back to the Premier League title race. Just a quick one for the 2 years. Do you think Arsenal and Liverpool, I'll start with you, John, but do you think Arsenal and Liverpool are capable at this point right now of winning the Premier League? I know they can do it, but do you think mentally, after what happened at the weekend, and you know, especially with Liverpool also losing against Atlanta, and the way that Pep Guardiola's teams play at this time of the season, do you think, can you see one of them winning it, essentially?
I think they're capable of it, Connor. I must say the team that I see winning it is Manchester City. But honestly, that is not me being revisionist. You know, I've said that since day one. And if you'd asked me a month ago, well, you know, I'm pretty sure we would have done a podcast a month ago, and you did ask me, and I still said Man City, just because I think they know what, you know, they've got and know what it takes to win a Premier League. So that's my belief, and it hasn't changed, I promise you, you know, all season. I think little bits of history drive Guardiola and his players. And I think, you know, winning the unprecedented fourth in a row is what, you know, is what drives them on this season. I think it's almost more important to them to win the Premier League for a record time than it is to win the Champions League. I really do. And so I think that's why I think they'll win it. But are the other two capable of? Yes. Do I see them doing it? No.
Andy, what do you think?
You know, John referenced the fact that very kindly that I tipped up Liverpool at the start of the season before a ball was kicked. I was, until a couple of weeks ago, I was adamant that would still be the case. I was still confident that Liverpool would go on and win the title. I think that the second half performance of Liverpool at Old Trafford, I think was a turning point, really, in the title race. And I think subsequent performances at Anfield. And yeah, listen, I was there on Thursday, I was there yesterday. And you know, I can't see Liverpool winning every single one of their remaining Premier League games. Neither can I see Arsenal do that. And for that reason, I'm with John. I think City are more than capable of doing that. And I think that Arsenal and Liverpool will have to win all of their remaining six Premier League games. I don't think they'll do it. You know, I find it remarkable they will do it again, but I think they will. I can't see. I look at that fixture list and I really can't see them losing the game.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Andy, for joining us this one. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Please remember to subscribe, like, comment on whatever platform you are watching or listening to this content on.